You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
An analysis of 10 years of data has found low English literacy rates in Pacifica students are a key predictor of exclusion from school. This study analysed a cohort of over 43,000 students from their first day of school in 2008 to the end of their compulsory schooling in 2018. It found 9% of Pākehā were excluded at some point during their compulsory schooling, compared with 21% of Pacifica students. Pacifica students who were identified as having English literacy difficulties and who were subsequently received English for speakers of other language or ESOL support were 35% more likely to be excluded than Pacifica students who were identified as having literacy issues. Now, I spoke to Stephen Agu, a senior lecturer of economics at the University of Canterbury, on the matter, and I started off by asking him about the study's findings. Here he is now.
We followed a cohort of students from when they started school in 2008 until the end of their year, the year 11 in 2018, so for the 10-year period. The rates of school exclusion through that period came out at about roughly 9% for Pākehā, but it was 22% for Pacifica. So we looked through the predictors of exclusion, and if you look at the international literature, it suggests that things like low socioeconomic, ethnicity, language are key predictors of school exclusion, and that was the case for Pacifica. Once you accounted for those things, it explained all of the difference between the Pākehā and Pacifica rates of exclusion. But one of those things was English language skills. So the number of Pacifica students who don't receive English language support in school, the number of those getting excluded is quite low relative to the number of Pacifica students who are receiving that type of support in school. They're excluded at a much, much higher rate. The key predictors of exclusion were things like if a parent had a criminal charge, if there'd been any interaction with SIFs, as it was known back then, parental education, socioeconomic status. But those predictors were predictors across all of the ethnicities, not just in Pacifica.
Now, you've also mentioned that these excluded students aren't necessarily just naughty.
No. So in the study, we sort of separated the variables up and into categories like demographics, family climate, family background, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's absolutely just the situations that the kids find themselves in most of the time that ends up in them being excluded. Because I used to be a high school teacher, and, you know, you see these kids in class and you just know that sometimes times aren't good in the home. Actually coming to school is a bit of a break for them away from the home environment. It's absolutely the vast majority of the time just the situation that the kid finds themselves in, and they tend to react to that situation.
So I guess where does the government start with a matter like this? They've already got matters in place to address this. The Ministry of Education provides funding to schools that have students with the highest English language learning needs. You know, the government spending to enhance educational outcomes is quite common. But when it comes to these sort of disparities, especially amongst Pacifica students, where does the government start with that?
I think the short answer to that question is the government needs to start as early as possible and increase the funding at those earlier stages. So, for example, they have the free fees policy, and the government, through the TUC, has said, you know, we need to increase the rates of achievement and attendance, you know, the number of students enrolled at university for Māori and Pacifica. But throwing $12,000 at the students when they arrive at university is far, far too late. A big chunk of students have sort of dropped out of the system by then. So it's far better to target what would be policy of the 20 hours free early childhood is a good policy. Lots of research has shown that even at the early childhood centre, early childhood level, if you increase the funding there, it has flow-through effects right through to much later in life. But for those students specifically with English language, they need English language help, they're getting minimal help from the government in terms of funding the schools. So for example, $12,000 a student can get free fees up to $12,000 in their first year. By comparison, for the students getting ESOL support in schools, if they're at primary school, they just get $780 a year. The school does. The school gets $780 a year for each student. Add $1,000 a year if they're in a high school. But that's capped. The most they can get that funding for is over a five-year period. So by comparison to what they're willing to throw at the tertiary sector, it's really not very much at all. Mm. And talking to English language teachers in schools, they say things like they have to subsidise that funding through international students. So they have international students enrolling at the school, and they'll take some of that money to fund the English language for those international students, but also for the domestic international student, the domestic English language students as well, because the funding just isn't high enough.
Do we also need to take into account how difficult it may be to learn English? I guess on the contrary, being more inclusive of their cultures and just taking into account how difficult it may be.
Yeah, so for the as part of that English language funding, it may be appropriate to pack more pastoral care around those students as well. So the funding doesn't all have to go to a teacher teaching them how to speak English. Helping them in other areas in the mainstream as well, just through providing support and mentorship for those type of students. Maybe that needs to be part of the package as well. But just the English language aspect of it themselves, if you're a migrant to New Zealand, like a first-generation migrant, then you can get up to 5 years of funding. If you're second generation but English language is not the first language spoken in the home, you can only get 3 years of English second language funding. And by international literature standards, that's not enough. There's plenty of literature that says you need longer than that to get a good grasp of the English language. So if you're a primary school kid and your parents moved to New Zealand but they don't speak English as a first language, you get $780 a year for 3 years. That's it. That's all that the school gets. And then after that, you're just in the mainstream. That's the $12,000 that they're willing to give to students to attend university. It pales by comparison. And then the other aspect of English language is that classes, you're targeting kids with an identified specific need. To encourage more Pacific or Māori students to attend university, they're paying $12,000 to every student, up to $12,000, to any student that enrolls. So it's a very blunt tool. There's a lot of spending that isn't going on the students that actually they're trying to attract.
Is there anything else we need to take into account, such as gender? Obviously we've gone over ethnicity, but yeah, things like gender, educational needs, stuff like that. Do we need to consider that when looking at funding policy, stuff like that?
Yes. So there's a very, very clear gender bias in school exclusion. Males are far more likely to be excluded than females. I'm not quite sure what the government response to that is though, to try to even that balance out. That was not quite such an easy fix. But then, yeah, sure, there's raising, just overall raising the socioeconomic status of people will lower school rates of exclusion if this correlation is a cause as well. So these predictors, if they can establish causal effects, the things like having internet access at the home, if the home is... someone in the home receives a family benefit for the kid. These sorts of things, they tend to be correlated with higher rates of exclusion. So raising people out of poverty is one target. Also, students who get reading recovery, they have special educational needs, as well as the English second language. They all have higher rates of exclusion.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, it's just, I think the main message is that kids who are getting excluded are getting excluded for a reason that often isn't of their own doing. It's just a situation that they find themselves in. So they should have funding attached to them to help them out, to help out their life outcomes, because they're coming from a lower start than the vast majority of other people. And if you get excluded at school, the literature suggests that there's going to just result in some pretty poor outcomes for you later in life. So you tend to have higher rates of mental health issues, suicide, unemployment, lower incomes, a lack of education. And so from the government's perspective, just putting money into addressing that problem, it's not like the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. If they can put funding in to lessen some of these issues, then it's going to result in a smaller cost to society overall, because there'll be hopefully fewer people going to jail and less of a strain on the mental health services. So it really does. It's a good investment which will reap rewards financially and socially further down the track if they can just target this a little bit earlier.
That was Stephen Angue, a senior lecturer of economics at the University of Canterbury, speaking about ending persistent disparities for Pacifica students in regards to literacy skills.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.